A very special thank you goes out to the NBA Twitter legend, the poster boy of the Big Three, the baby-faced assassin, Oliver Maroney. Also, Real Ball Insiders, thank you so much for allowing this podcast to be possible. Welcome back to the Four Seasons Podcast. I'm Ryan Mogjosh. To my right, Zach Noble, as always. What's up, Zach?
I am good. Got a couple things rolling this week, and then I'm off to the islands on Wednesday. So I'm excited to blast out a couple pods here, and I'm just ready for a vacay, ready to get out of the cold. I'm ready to get to paradise for a little bit. I got a two-week honeymoon, so I'm ready for that.
Yes, but that'll be awesome.
I can't wait. So there should be a good slate of games on tonight. Looking forward to that as well.
Absolutely. Joining us today, writer for Dime Magazine and host of the Big Three Show, Oliver Maroney. Oliver, how's it going, man?
Oh, it's going well, guys. It's going well.
Awesome. We're glad to have you. I mean, you're one of Twitter's favorite follows. I mean, everybody likes discussing a little bit with Oliver Maroney, so it's good to have you aboard. Oliver, I know most of your writing's done through Dime, and that's part of UpRocks, correct? Am I saying that properly?
Yeah, UpRocks is. Yeah, UpRocks is kind of the overbearing umbrella. Dime actually used to be its own publication.
Yep.
Many people remember it as an actual magazine. Published. It used to come out, you know, on a monthly basis, and then it teetered it down to a quarterly basis, I believe, and then UpRocks kind of bought out the Dime brand, and so they've kept the Dime brand under UpRocks. So I am technically a writer at UpRocks, but Dime is just like the subsector for just basketball content at this point.
Right. For a while, I mean, I always kind of compared it to Slam Magazine a little bit. I mean, is that fair?
Definitely fair. Yeah, I think those were the only two real competing magazines at the time. I mean, you look at Sports Illustrated and stuff like that, those are all general sports. I mean,
right.
It's not just
right.
basketball.
Right.
ESPN, obviously, the mag had their run as well, and they did mostly sports as well, not basketball specific. So, yeah, it was really Dime and Slam for quite some time. But, you know, obviously print is just so difficult, and it's tough. So
very cool.
Kept away from that, but it's on the website. So.
Yeah, I've learned about it through you, honestly. Didn't really know about UpRocks before that. I knew about Dime for sure, but definitely that's how I got familiar with UpRocks. But tell us a little bit about your career path in sports and what led you to getting in with UpRocks here.
Yeah, I mean, I started out as a high school basketball reporter in, gosh, I think it was like 6th or 7th grade. I was a high school basketball reporter for the Oregonian, which is the local newspaper. It's probably the biggest newspaper in Oregon, I think. I still think it is. But, yeah, I did some high school reporting. It was at a time where, gosh, I mean, it was when I was, you know, in middle school, it was Kevin Love and Terrence Ross and Terrence Jones.
Oh, yeah.
And all of these guys coming up from the Oregon high school basketball ranks. So I was very lucky to, you know, meet with a lot of them, get to know them, you know, before they became NBA superstars or NBA stars or I guess NBA players, because, you know, Terrence Jones is out of the league. Terrence Ross is, you know, starting on an Orlando Magic team that people have doubts about. And then Kevin Love, obviously, I think he's pretty appreciated. But, you know, those were kind of the guys that were coming up, Kyle Singler, EJ Singler. There's actually a huge crop of
Oregon talent. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, did any of those guys go to your high school specifically or just in the area for you?
Yeah, just in the area. No, nobody went to my high school specifically. The closest one I could say would probably be, Mike James, actually. So Mike
there's
James
a name.
Mike
Phoenix
James.
he didn't go to my high school, but he went to a high school like, 10 blocks from my house, 15 blocks from my house. So, I got to know him. You know, I just know a lot of the talent around the area. I got to see them firsthand. And that's kind of how I developed into kind of moving into NBA writing, is just knowing the high school game as well as I did and just feeling comfortable and confident with relationship building. And it's kind of just in my DNA. So moved from there to a bunch of different websites, started my own kind of blog in between, just trying to I don't know, just trying to write about basketball and figure out, you know, the NBA game as opposed to high school and college, and just built up a pretty good list of relationships, and from there it's just been, you know, smooth sailing. I've been with Dime about a year, maybe a little bit longer than a year now. I was at Basketball Insiders before that, so yeah, just moving, I would hope, upwards, but really it's about just creating quality content.
Absolutely. No, you're doing a great job. We both follow you pretty intensely. So you said you started in 6th and 7th grade in high school covering higher levels. Do you mind me asking how old you are now?
Yeah, so I'm 25 now, so I'm okay. A little bit older than most people see on my images and whatnot.
No, I was going to say, you have
all the time. I mean, at the big three, they're like, hey, are you even old enough to drink or whatever? I get that all the time. So, yeah, no, that just part of the deal. You know, a lot of people are like, hey, when you're 40, you know, you look like you're 20. I'm like, yeah, that's great, but that's not helping me right now, so.
No, I was going to say, you're doing a good job early, and you got the baby face going for you, so that's good. But it seems that for a 25-year-old, I mean, you seem extremely connected really early on in your career, and I think that has to do with you getting involved so early, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, I think that's a huge part of, you know, writing these days is you've got to find an in. You've got to find a way. You know, look, there's great PR teams out there for NBA organizations. There's great, you know, PR people within, you know, managements and agencies and different things like that, but quite frankly, I find that building a relationship with the player is really the only way to get involved and know them as people. You know, you can go through an agency and get 5 or 10 minutes on the phone with a guy or something like that, but how genuine is that? Do they really know you? They're just talking to some talking head on the phone. Right. They have no idea who you are. I mean, that to me, it's, yeah, like I said, I pick and choose what interviews I do because I do want that relationship. I do want to be able to portray something different, a message that's different from what other people do. And so that's why, yeah, like I said, that's why I've gone in early. I'm lucky to be able to have covered high school basketball in Oregon when it was thriving and having a lot of success. And that just led me to, like I said, other players, other connections, other things. You do good work, people recognize it, people see it, and then others want in. So, yeah.
Right, yeah, you said something really interesting in touching with agencies, getting a hold of as many players as you can. Is that something that you do to just get on the phone with them for 5 or 10 minutes, like you said, or do you try to actually make a in-person meeting with certain players? How does that work? And do you think that you would benefit from maybe getting face-to-face time with them?
Yeah, I mean, really, most of my interviews are probably 75% of them are done through the phone. 25% are in person. The 75% that are on the phone, 70% of them I know before I call them.
Okay.
You know, whoever it is. I've talked to them previously. I've met them. It really ranges and varies. But I'd say, you know, for me personally, I like to know the person that I'm talking to and not just come in with a bunch of question and answer kind of format. I really want it to be a conversation. I just want to chat with them, figure out, you know, talk man to man, you know, friend to friend, whatever the case may be. And I think for the most part, players know that. So, I mean, the guard is not on when I'm talking to guys. You know, at the big three, it's me and Michael Rapoport practices, and Steven Jackson will come over and talk to us for 15 minutes. And he knows that I'm not going to post anything that he says, I'm not going to share anything that he says. That's all, you know, I keep it very clean in that aspect to where people can trust me and understand that I'm not going to burn a bridge or, you know, take something out of proportion or use it to my advantage.
Absolutely. That's the only way to build that trust. That's cool, man. So tell us a little bit. I mean, I've noticed your last piece of writing was maybe Michael Smith off the 6, and is most of your writing interviews then? Or tell us a little bit about your writing style and what you like to focus on.
Yeah, I like focusing on good stories. It's hard to just, you know, I don't like to dive deep into stats. People who follow me, people who know me, know that I'm not a stats junkie. Of course, I'm going to post them every once in a while or, you know, share interesting ideas that I see or trends that we see or whatnot. But I'm just one believer that, you know, watching the game and, you know, finding just interesting ideas from it. I think, you know, Michael Smith was one that definitely, man, I've known Michael article for like 2 or 3 years now.
Awesome.
And, it's, you know, it was a story I'd been thinking about, but there wasn't really a angle for it. And then I saw Jemele Hill and all the articles and all the posts and all the things about her. I'm like, hold on a second here. Like, there's another half to this show that, like, nobody's talking about. And no offense, like, Jemele Hill is great.
Uh-huh.
It's not anything against her. But it's just, I was confused because,
yep,
you know, the other side of it just wasn't even told. So that's when I decided to reach out to Michael. I talked to him, said, here's kind of the angle that I'd like to go with. I mean, obviously, you guys put in a ton of time. And then from there, we had a couple different phone conversations. Before the Jemele Hill stuff really blew up, I mean, there was a couple of pieces right before everything broke as far as her being suspended and all this other stuff. And that's when we had chatted. And so we chatted on multiple occasions, kind of piecing together, you know, his story, what he went through, you know, how he got to where he is, just doing all the, you know, the biographical stuff. And then on top of that, just trying to illustrate what they're trying to accomplish. And I felt like, you know, obviously that piece turned out pretty well. I think people liked it, and that's what I try to do with most stories. I mean, CJ McCollum or whoever the profile is on, whoever the story is on, I try and take a unique side of it, something
mm-hmm.
different, or else I'm not going to write it, quite frankly.
That's very good. That's also very refreshing. You don't see a lot, or at least enough of that. So kind of talk about how you got involved with the Big Three. Obviously, they had a really successful year last year. Very fun to watch, some big-time names. How'd you get involved with the Big Three?
I was like one of the first, I think I was one of the first, like, gosh, I want to say 500 to 1,000 or whatever followers of the Big Three on Twitter. And I was shouting them out, and I was like, once they announced it, I'm just like, oh, this is dope.
Awesome.
I
yeah.
I want to be a, how can I help? How can I be involved? I didn't really illustrate that at all. I just kind of was like, this is so cool, like the concept, the idea, everything.
Mm-hmm.
Cube is like, quite frankly, he's like one of my idols in the scheme of things just because of the way he's been able to transcend, like, from sports to hip-hop
mm-hmm.
to music to movies. He's just
he built
an empire out of almost, you know, out of close to nothing. And I you know, gotta respect what he's been able to accomplish, and this is just another thing to add to his resume. But it's something that basically they reached out, the PR team there reached out and said, hey, would you be interested in doing some stories on us? You know, and we kind of shot some ideas back and forth. And from there, you know, I told them, look, if I'm going to do a story, I wanted to go deep. I want to talk about the Big Three and how this all started. Like, I'm really curious, like, where does this conversation happen? How did it take place?
Yeah.
So they connected me with Cube and obviously AI and Jeff Kwatnitz, the co-founder, you know, one of the guys that really put a lot of effort into this.
Very cool.
As well as a few of the different players that were starting out, you know, Kenyon Martin or Ricky Davis or guys like that. And did a huge piece on it. And at the end of, like, gosh, I remember interviewing Cube and talking about how it started and everything else. And at the end of the interview, he kind of solicited ideas from me and was like, yo, you know basketball, what should we do or what do you think about it, you know? And I said, oh, that's great. And we go back and forth for a little while, and I said, you know, podcasting is just such like a big deal these
mm-hmm.
days, and like people who don't have access to Twitter or, you know, don't have time to check their timeline every couple of minutes or check big3.com, you know, they may want like an in-depth interview, and like getting your own original content out there in some way, shape, or form, it's always good, you know. Maybe a podcast would be a good idea. And he said, yeah, so send me an email and, you know, detail it all out and everything. So that's how the conversation started. That's how it was kind of approached. And, you know, about a month later, after the idea kind of got chalked out, we decided to run the show. And once a week, we take a guest, you know, talk about his journey, his career, where he came from, his highlights of his career, and then on to the Big Three, and just kind of looking forward to the matchup, what's been fun, what's different, etc. So hoping to do it again for season two as well.
Awesome. So our listeners know, you're basically the official podcast of the Big Three is your involvement, correct?
That's correct. Yeah, no, yep. That's
excellent.
That's very true.
No, that's cool. So what are your thoughts on the first year of the organization?
It was
What are your takeaways?
Being on the ground level, like seeing it come to life and come to fruition the way that it did. I mean, I just thought it was, like I said, I thought it was genius to begin with. There may have been some bumps along the way. The AI situation obviously was kind of a downer, but I think overall they did a really, really good job with not only the broadcast, the people they brought in. I mean, like, you look at the broadcast, they have, like, Joy Taylor and Michael Rapaport.
Yep.
And just, like, a bunch of cool personalities, along with just some, like, real, down-to-earth, genuine players.
Mm-hmm.
Every single one of those guys, really, really nice, really humble, always happy to take time. I mean, I was just blessed and super thankful to be able to go for 5 weeks and be able to, you know, go to practices, play horse, you know, shoot around, hang out with all these guys, you know. It was really, really fun. And I thought, you know, the product on the court was good. It took a couple of weeks to kind of figure out what the rules were going to be, how it would work out, how the structure was. But I think overall, from a fan's perspective, from a basketball fan's perspective, it's, you know, bar none, the most, like, hard-nosed, gritty, and mm-hmm. entertaining style of basketball that I've seen. I mean, it's so different from what you're used to.
Right.
So I think that really, it struck a chord with me, because obviously the NBA is, you can kind of predict what's happening at the current moment just because of how good Golden State is and
yep.
how great Cleveland has been. So, you know, it's a great change of pace for the summertime.
So you're spitballing ideas with Ice Cube, working with Michael Rapaport. How is Michael? Is he a fun guy to be around? He sounds and he looks, from the podcast that I listen to and when I watch him on TV, he looks like a fun guy to be around.
He's never off. Like, you can't turn that guy off. Like,
no.
He just keeps going and ranting and talking trash. And, like, gosh, I remember I think we were in Kentucky at the time, and he's talking trash to Rex Chapman, and they're shooting Jays, and they're both, like, I mean, Michael would airball a shot and still start talking trash. That's just who he is.
Sure.
And it's so entertaining. And we actually did some segments. I was working with them on, like, some short, you can find them on YouTube, there's a couple of them, but just, like, short player interviews and segments. We didn't actually use the segment with Michael Rapaport, but we did this, like, short little segment where Michael Rapaport was going to talk to Corey Maggette about how he interviews players, because he's a sideline reporter as well.
Yeah.
And we didn't give him a script. We didn't give him anything, you know, to say. We just told him, hey, you're going to tell Corey Maggette some pointers or tips on how to do things. And, like, he ranted for, like, 10 or 15 minutes, and it was just pure gold. Like, I really wish we would have used the segment. But
yeah, he's
just
awesome.
Hey, he's absolutely, like, as an actor or just as somebody, a talking head, a personality, like, there's no one anywhere near him, as far as I'm concerned. I've never ran into somebody like that where you can just hand him a mic, he can just take over the room,
uh-huh.
he can make everybody laugh. I mean, in practices, he's making, like, George Gervin and like, it's timeless. It doesn't matter if you're, like, 70 years old or 20 years old, like, you can understand the humor that he's using. And it's fun to watch, man. It makes everything better.
So I'm looking at your Twitter right now. You got a picture with not only Rapaport, but it's like a collage of you talking to a bunch of different personalities, some players, some coaches. Where was this? Is this in Vegas?
I think those are in Los Angeles and Seattle and Vegas. They're pieced together from all different places.
Okay. Okay.
But yeah, they're just, like, at different practices, and we went to a couple, like, shoe events and some other stuff with a bunch of players. But yeah, it's all over the place. There's just, yeah, it was a rock tour. Is basically
yeah,
it looks like a blast.
Yeah.
That's exactly what I was going to say there. So I was wondering, I wasn't able to find it anywhere. I mean, did the league make money overall? I mean,
yeah. So, I mean, honestly, the league started, I don't know the financials. I don't know what ended up happening. I know the numbers as far as ticket sales go and stuff like that. Not the financial side of it, but they sold out, I think it was 8 of 10 arenas.
Oh, wow.
They did very well in considering, you know, how short of notice they had. Obviously, they're back for Season 2 and Season 3, and FS1 renewed the contracts, so
mm-hmm.
clearly the ratings were high enough,
right.
The viewership was high enough. The plan is to go live, from my understanding, every game this year instead of just the final. So, okay. they definitely, I think, from all aspects, they were successful. Obviously, I think the question mark I would have, and I guess moving forward, would just be, you know, do they get a jersey sponsor? Do they get other sponsors involved? Because they really, if anybody noticed, they didn't have any sponsors and
right, yeah.
were still successful. So I think it's a business model that certainly proved itself to everybody. And I'm sure, you know, that will come whenever they decide it's time.
So the latest news for Big Three, the return of Ron Artest, Meta World Peace.
Oh, shit.
He's back. Yep. He's who did he sign with?
He signed with the Killer Threes, which is Chauncey Billups and Steven Jackson's team. Okay. So that is going to be, yeah, that's a brutal three-man lineup.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, the Killer Threes were pretty poor this year. Obviously, Chauncey Billups was out of the lineup for a few weeks.
Yeah.
But for the most part, man, I think that's going to be a much better team this year.
Yeah, I feel like the Big Three and Meta World Peace is a great fit. The physical play, the bully ball, he's going to be a match made in heaven with that, don't you think?
Yeah, it should be fun to watch, man. There was trash talking, there was pushing, there was shoving, there mm-hmm. was arguing. I don't know if you guys saw, but I think it was L.A., which was like the semifinals. Maybe it was the last game of the regular season. I can't remember, but... it was the last regular season games. But Charles Oakley went at it with Al Harrington a little bit.
Yeah.
There's some fun banter back and forth. You can definitely, if you're close to the court on the games, in the games, you can definitely hear the trash talk.
Outside of sponsorships, I mean, in your thoughts, I mean, where does the league need to improve the most and any major changes coming in year two?
I think really... Obviously, I think giving people more of a heads up, obviously, like letting them know, hey, this is what the schedule looks like. Because, I mean, I think the schedule was released pretty late on. I want to say it was like May or June. And obviously, the game started like late June. So the push for the games themselves and the league and everything else, it just came through a little bit slower because, you know, they didn't announce the league until late January, I believe. So, mm-hmm. Just getting that out earlier, I think, would be definitely helpful for fans, for people to plan their summers around, because obviously it's vacation time for a lot of people. Making sure you hit other destinations. I mean, they hit some good ones, but at the same time, I feel like they missed a few. I think Atlanta is a great market that you could probably hit in. Miami, you look at some of the other West Coast areas that they could hit. They hit Las Vegas, they hit Los Angeles. I think they'll still hit those, but... you could go to Seattle again, maybe even Vancouver. I don't know if that's even a possibility because
that'd
it's
be sweet.
Canada. But bringing back, you know, basketball to places that haven't seen basketball. I mean, I know Seattle was just rocking, and it was really, really cool to watch just the fans and all the Supersonic fans come out and watch these guys play. So I just think bringing basketball back to places that haven't had it in a while, making sure that they announce it earlier. As far as the game pace and gameplay, I think the only thing I would change would be free throws cannot be game point.
I hate that too.
So, yeah, late game fouls. I honestly, when a team is within 3 points of winning, I just say no foul calls unless it's absolutely brutal. I mean, it'd have to be like a flagrant or something like that for it to be a free throw. But for me, I think I'd like to see that old school mentality.
Yeah,
I know these
definitely.
Guys have respect for one another to the point where they're not going to go out and just hit guys just to hit guys. They're competitive, but they're not going to go out and do that sort of stuff. So, I think that's... That would be the only change I'd make.
That's because you're used to the jailblazers out there.
Yes, exactly. I don't like to see games won and lost off a free throw.
Right, yeah. So bringing back basketball to a place that doesn't usually get basketball, how about Kansas City, where Zach and I are residing right now?
Hey, that's a good opportunity right there.
Hey, we got the Sprint Center going up now. We got an NBA preseason game this year. We got the KUMU game. I think we should be growing as a possibility for not only this, but maybe even like a...
It's a good...
Big three.
Good
yeah. Just get us big
yeah,
three.
That'd be awesome. So transitioning away from big three just for the time being, we got a segment here called Buy or Sell. and you're probably familiar with this. We're going to name some teams here that either are striving way beyond what everybody thought, or maybe struggling a bit. But we have three teams from the East that we'll start out with, and you can just choose to buy or sell their current state. So we'll start out with the surprising Detroit Pistons, who are currently second in the East right now, sitting at 10-3. Are you buying that they can keep this up, or are you selling the Detroit Pistons?
I will, man, that's a tough one, because I believe that they are a better team than they were last season, but uh-huh. not as good as their record indicates right now.
Yeah, you can just give a slight sell, because that's exactly what I'm going to do too.
A slight sell, how about that? I'll sell it for like half of $1.
I like that.
Something like that. I'll sell half my stock and keep the rest of it.
Zach?
So, Ryan, you didn't have them in the playoffs to start the year.
I did not. They're surprising me.
Do you think they're going to make it now?
Well, if Tobias Harris keeps bawling out of his mind like he is right now, I might be proven wrong.
Exactly. So I had them tied for the eighth spot, but I had them losing the tiebreaker at the beginning of the year to the Sixers. So I had them at my ninth seed. Honestly, I see them as low. Potential's as low as the fourth seed if they keep this play up. I don't see that happening. I see somewhere around the sixth seed. I'd still say I'm buying them because it's higher than what I had them in the preseason. But Andre Drummond right now is top five in defensive box plus minus, so that's pretty huge.
Playing really well and shooting free throws way better than he did last year, which is good.
What's the percentage on that? I didn't really.
Right now, correct me if I'm wrong, I want to say mid 70s right now.
Holy shit, are you serious?
Yeah, like last year he was at what?
Yeah.
39 ish area, which was just unacceptable. I'm pulling it up right now.
I mean, he changed his shot, yeah.
He definitely
changed
his
shot
yeah.
completely.
63, I mean, yeah, that's throws, huge.
Okay,
and 63. He just. Last year, like, every other free throw shot was different. Like, he was trying to change the motion. And, like,
yeah.
any basketball player that you talk to, that's, like, the number one no-no. Like,
exactly.
You cannot change your free throw shot the way it's done. Like, just do the same thing over and over. The regiment needs to stay the same. And I think he's stuck on that this year to where his, you know, free throw shooting is higher. Obviously, he worked on it in the offseason. But, yeah, it's been impressive, like, his transformation, because everybody was really low on him this summer. Like, they're just like, okay, well, trade him. I'd rather have Nerlens Noel than I would Andre Drummond. And, like, we saw this guy dominate the year prior, but he just, you know, the free throws, the question marks around, like, just him being a positionless basketball player, or if he, you know, is basically the old school five, mm-hmm. like, can he really transition? He's been very impressive this season, and I give him a lot of credit for, like, putting up with all the slack, putting up with all the crap, and then just, like, going out and displaying it the way he has. Like, he's balling out. He's, you know, most improved player, quite frankly, like, that
ooh.
I know it sounds crazy, but, like, that's, like, kind of a guy that I would say, especially given the circumstances, you know, they're obviously winning basketball games way more than people expected, and a lot of the reason is because of him.
I agree.
So, do you guys think they could win a round?
I don't know. Do you?
Really?
I don't know. I don't want to go too far.
Right.
Reggie Jackson's playing pretty well.
I'm still saying no on that.
Not a fan of Reggie Jackson that much.
Same.
His game just isn't really entertaining for me to watch. I'll sell the fact that they're going to make the second round of the playoffs.
Yeah, it's it's 12 games in the season. It's we got a lot of basketball.
How big of overreactors you guys are. That's part of this game.
So right behind them in the Eastern Conference standings right now at third place, the Orlando Magic, and somehow they're using their magic and shooting lights out from three. They're the number one 3-point shooting team in the league. They're sitting at 8-5. Are you buying the Orlando Magic?
I will buy them at 8-5.
Ooh, I like that.
Yep. Yeah, give me that. I like this Orlando Magic team. I love the way they play basketball. I love the way they're moving the ball. You know, Vucevic is balling out. Evan Fournier is, I mean, I thought that contract was one of the worst, and he's gone out and just, you know, completely blown that in the dust. I think that contract is definitely valued. And
Talking Fournier?
Yeah, Fournier.
Well, man, that's my guy.
He's been killing it. From downtown, he's just You know, he's really, really good.
Yep.
His stroke is nice. It's a quick release. And I think that has really helped this team out. I think Terrence Ross has done well. He's fit into that starting lineup, done his job. I think, obviously, where they kind of lack, I guess, if there is a position, is just point guard and just, like, trusting that position with them. But I think overall, I mean, Aaron Gordon, obviously, that's, I can't believe I didn't even mention him. But
yeah.
He's double. I think he's shooting double his three-point percentage from last year. So, yeah, that's impressive. Does it stay this way the entire season? I don't know, but I will buy 8-5 translating over a season. So I don't know what that equals, but it's probably like mid-40 wins.
I like
wow,
that.
Mid-40 wins. So that's playoffs for sure.
Yeah.
I highlighted Aaron Gordon on Basketball Reference to remind myself to ask you. So you're not even going to mention Aaron Gordon, the most improved player of the year.
Yeah.
Ryan's going to make a note.
Actually, this is probably the most impressive and entertaining year for the most improved player.
Yes, I agree.
Like, you look around the league, you've got Andre Drummond just destroying people. You've got Aaron Gordon, like, improving his jump shot and his three-point shot that everybody had question marks about. You have Blake Griffin proving to people that he can shoot the outside shot with efficiency. There's just, like, Giannis, obviously, making that leap, getting to that MVP kind of caliber season. I don't know if you can give him the MIP and the MVP, but he's in there.
He is.
You can throw in other guys as well. I mean, there's a lot of players to choose from, and obviously it'll change. It's only 12, 13 games in the season. We're a little bit early with this stuff, but I think for now, the league has been very entertaining as far as the most improved player award goes.
Oh, yeah. The Four Seasons podcast, Zach and I are a huge sucker for most improved player of the year. We've talked about it on like 4 or 5 podcasts, so we're obsessed with that. We're obsessed with young guys getting better and growing in the league.
So, Ryan, Orlando Magic, I had them as the 10th seed at 35 wins to start the year. That was much higher than you had them. You had them much lower than that, mm-hmm. but I think they're going to – I'm ready to say mid-40s yet, Oliver. I'm thinking still between 35 and 42 right now at this rate. I do think they're looking towards the playoffs. I definitely don't see them out of that. So I'm buying that they're legit. But I'm not buying mid-40s yet because I think mid-40s almost in this Eastern Conference right now, I think mid-40s almost gets you home court advantage. One highlight about the Magic success, Nikola Vucevic per 100 possessions, they outscore opponents 11.8 points per 100. When he's off the court, they're outscored by 9.9 points per 100. So it's a big difference there.
I think I'm going to sell Orlando slightly. I think their percentages are too scary high. They're just unconscious right now, just on fire. And I don't think that'll last. Right now, they could prove me wrong to sneak in the playoffs, but we'll see.
All right, there we go.
Next, would you believe it? The New York Knicks, 7-5 currently, 5th in the East. Are you buying or selling the New York Porzingises?
Oh, man. That's a great name.
I'm glad you put Porzingis in there because, I was going to say, can I just separate the Knicks from Porzingis?
Yeah, absolutely.
And just
yes.
Buy all the Porzingis stock that I can, but get rid of all the Knicks stock. I'm going to sell this. I do not think that this is something that can last.
Yep.
His efficiency with his usage rate is unbelievable.
Uh-huh.
I know I got a ton of heat from people on Twitter saying that he's quite possibly the most versatile player that I've ever seen.
I saw that tweet.
Hey, I backed you up on that.
And I'm not saying that, look, there's a, in Twitter, you throw thoughts out there. In my opinion, this is how I use Twitter.
Yes.
I throw thoughts out there because this is what I'm thinking. And then after you get, so many replies like, oh my gosh, look at LeBron, look at all these people. It gets to a point where you almost try and convince yourself, like, why did I say this in the first place? But I'm going to back it up with basically, at his size, Porzingis is the most versatile player I've seen in the NBA. And I don't think there's any way that you can dispute it just based on the way that he's shooting the basketball, scoring with efficiency, and, honestly, defending as well as he has. I mean, he's blocking shots, he's grabbing, the boards aren't necessarily there, but I wouldn't be worried about that. They're grabbing enough rebounds as a team to win basketball games. That's really all that should matter. I think rebounds is kind of an overrated statistic in general, because half of the rebounds in a game are gimmies usually. So I don't buy the whole rebounding thing for big men in the league anymore, just because it's positionless basketball for the most part, and there's just so many other facets to the game that there weren't, you know, 10, 15 years ago. But for me, sell the Knicks. I would buy a ton of Porzingis stock, and that's pretty much where I'm at with this. I don't think the Knicks are going to be, you know, over 500 for that much longer.
Yeah. See, I agree with your take on Twitter. It's what you're thinking. And you having the following that you have, I can't imagine how many people are involved and how many people are tweeting back at you. But the 7'3 thing is a legit thing. Like, him being 7'3 and having the skill set that he has offensively is crazy. And that's where your tweet about him being the most versatile is accurate, I think. Right. Including the 7'3 part is just mind-blowing. The rebounds, he is alongside Enes Kanter, who is a freak on the boards. I think he's averaging 10.6, it says here. So, yeah, that's definitely a team stat. I am also selling on the New York Knicks. A lot of it's hype. Playing in Madison Square Garden, everybody's fiending for basketball. It's been gone for so long. Early in the season, Porzingis is an MVP candidate. It's just they're fueling on hype. And I think that'll die down here pretty soon. I'm very interested in this game against Cleveland here in, like, what, 22 minutes? We'll see LeBron versus Porzingis. But I am with you. I'm selling the Knicks.
So I'm sorry, Knicks world. I am also selling this. I don't think they make the playoffs right now. They're sitting at the 5 seed. They started 0-2. They're 7-3 in their last 10. KP is – Kristaps Porzingis is third in player efficiency rating. Like you said, for his amount of usage, that's incredible right now. We like to give shout-outs to people that deserve to be respected on here, and one guy lately is Kyle O'Quinn. He's top 10 in box plus minus in the entire league, and top 5 in defensive box plus minus. So shout-out to Kyle O'Quinn there.
How do you like that? Our last Eastern Conference team, buying or selling, the currently 12th in the East, 5-7, Charlotte Hornets.
I will buy a lot of the Charlotte Hornets.
Let's hear it. Let's hear it.
The Charlotte Hornets. First of all, Dwight Howard playing at a pretty good level, considering everything that's gone on with his career the past two or three seasons. I think he's overachieving, but I think he will continue to do that. I think in general, the versatility they present with the players that they have is unique. Defensively, Clifford coach team is going to be good. I buy them being at least 500 at the end of the season.
You said 500 at the end of the season?
Yeah, at least 500, yeah. At least 500 basketball, in my opinion.
So you're selling their play right now. You're not buying into how shitty they are.
Sorry, I thought I was buying the team. I guess I am selling their play now.
But
I will buy the team overall. I think that is a... Yes, so I'm selling their play currently. I do not think they are as bad as their record indicates.
I think all three of us are on the same page there. We all had them in the playoffs, preseason predictions. Dwight has been a surprise. I'm not sure how he is in the locker room, but his play is great. Rebounding like an animal, as always, rim protecting. And I'm a big fan of Kemba. I don't think he gets enough love. Huge fan of Kemba. Zach here is a sucker for Nick Batum. You love Nick Batum.
And now Malik Monk. I think Malik Monk is going to turn out to be a dandy. I think for sure top 7 player in this draft. And he's looking up already for me. As for me, Charlotte, Ryan wasn't as high on him as I was. I think you had him like, what, 8 to start the year?
Yeah.
I had him as my preseason 6. I think, I mean, at this rate, I mean, how long is Nick Batum out again? December?
I couldn't tell you.
Yeah, so I'm thinking they're going to probably make the playoffs. I still see them as the 8 seed. I'm selling what they're doing right now. I think they're going to get much better. I believe in Clifford, like you said, Oliver, but they're definitely not going to finish as the 12 seed.
All right, moving on to the Western Conference. Our first team, buy or sell, The 8-5 Denver Nuggets.
Oh, this is tough.
It is tough.
I'm going to make this up as I go. I will pop the stock. I'm not going to buy anymore. I'm not going to sell anymore.
You're staying neutral.
Exactly where they should be.
I like that.
Pretty much, like, on the season, I expect about 45 wins. So I guess that's probably, you know, the equivalent of 8-5.
What are your worries with them? What are your worries with them? If you're staying neutral, it obviously means you are hesitant to buy.
Right.
Point guard play?
That's exactly mine, too.
Absolutely inconsistent.
Yes.
And, like, in order to win in the Western Conference with all the guards that are presenting themselves on a nightly basis, I don't trust Denver's guards over almost any team in the Western Conference right now. I mean, it's very, very difficult for me to trust any of them. I love Jamal Murray, don't get me wrong. Mm-hmm. He's a great player. But the way they play him, like, one night he starts, the next night he doesn't. Like, I just... It's partly coaching, and it's partly on the players that they have. They don't have a true point guard, in my opinion, on their team, really, that can really run an offense. I am pretty high on Moutier, but they don't really... I mean, obviously, Moutier turns the ball over. Mm-hmm. He's still got the mistakes that he's had since his rookie season. I don't know where you go. I think that team with, like, an Eric Bledsoe or another piece like that would have been so much better, in my opinion. And... I don't know why they didn't kind of try and kick the tires on that a little more. Maybe they're just deciding this is what they want to use. But Paul Millsap also really hasn't been the player that I anticipated him being going to Denver. So for those reasons, I'm staying put.
You mentioned something about coaching. So are you not that high on Mike Malone? Because I am.
Yeah, I'm not bought into Mike Malone yet. I need to see proof that they can play consistently on a night in and night out basis, and I just don't see it. I don't feel like they are. Like I said, I'm not a stats guy. I don't know what the stats say. Mm-hmm. I'm going to be honest, but I will tell you just from watching them, it just seems like quarter after quarter, it is different. It just feels different. The team doesn't have an identity, in my opinion. Like they should have an identity on paper, but they don't necessarily. And for that reason, I just don't. I don't feel like it will ever work for them truly the way they want it to unless they establish a true point guard that plays 30 minutes a night and, you know, finds a way to get Paul Millsap more involved and have him more of a threat on offense as well as, you know, exploiting the matchups on defense with Paul Millsap. So, yeah, that's kind of my opinion of him.
Yeah, your Mike Malone stuff makes sense. Going back to last year, it took him a third of the season to figure out, oh, Jokic is good. We have Nurkic and Jokic, and we can't play them together, but what do? And, they experimented with a ton of lineups, and they struck gold finally with Jokic, and they're like, oh, shit, this guy can play. So that kind of makes sense. I hear where you're coming from. I do think I'm a huge Jamal Murray guy, but I'm a huge fan of him playing the shooting guard. Yeah, the shooting guard, though. I don't know if he has the skill set right now to play point guard, and that worries me. So we are dead set on the same page there.
So I had Denver originally as the sixth seed in the West, and right now they're currently the third seed. I'm not buying that they're staying at the third seed. I'm buying that they'll be right at the sixth seed like I predicted. I do think Millsap's going to come around. I think that they're going to start getting some structure. I, however, was very happy with the year they had last year, even though it took forever to discover Jokic, sure. But Nurkic is also very good as well. They went 40-42 last year. That's a really good season for that squad and that young of team as well. That's why I'm so sold on Mike Malone. Just the year he had last year and his past, I think he's done great work as well. Jokic right now really sticking out. The team is either plus 6 points or minus 6 points, whether he's on the court or not. That's a big deal to me. He's top five in the league in box plus minus, top 10 in offensive box plus minus. So he's having a killer year so far.
Now, this is going to get kind of tricky. We have a doubleheader here. So we're going to do two teams at once. They're both tied currently, ninth in the West. But two teams that I feel are underachieving so far. That's the Utah Jazz at 6-7 and the Oklahoma City Thunder at 6-7. Are you buying or selling the Jazz and the Thunder?
I like the Jazz. I like Quinn Snyder. I like the way they play basketball. Rudy Gobert's out for 4 to 6 weeks, which is not good. Not good at all for that team, because Rudy Gobert is one of the best centers in the league and really, really, you know, on offense and defense, really means a lot to that team. So I don't know where they're going to get, you know, they're going to make up his offense and what he brings to the table on defense as well. I would probably say that I would sell them at the current moment. Sell the fact that they are losing record right now. I think they will tame, you know, get closer to 500 as the season progresses.
Right.
But I don't know if they're necessarily a playoff team at this point because of that injury and just a ton of question marks regarding kind of what they're going to be doing. I love Donovan Mitchell. I think he should be starting. He has started a couple of games, but is he going to continue, or is that a Rubio situation? Like, I guess there's just some question marks where I don't have answers for him, so I would sell them at this point, but I'm not going to sell heavy on them just because I don't know. There's too many question marks.
Yeah, I think Donovan Mitchell has a little bit of Deion Waiters in him.
Thank you!
He'll miss, like, 12 shots and say, okay, that means nothing to me. This 13th shot's going all net. Like, he has no conscience.
Keep shooting.
Yes, exactly.
Oh, shit.
I'm a big fan of Donovan Mitchell. I'm also a big fan of the Jazz, but like you said, one of the best centers in the league being out 4 to 6 weeks is not good. And without him and their pride being on the defensive end, they're going to really struggle here. So I might sell them for the short time being.
Yeah, so I've been selling them all year. Ryan's actually been very high. I want to point that out. But, like, it definitely, I mean, they're, I think it's all out the door with this Rudy Gobert stretch right now. They haven't won a road game yet. And it definitely doesn't help. I was much higher on Donovan Mitchell to start the year, but it definitely doesn't help when Donovan Mitchell and Ricky Rubio are your two biggest chuckers. Deion Waiters, that's a fact. I mean, 14 and 12 attempts from those two, and those guys are not shooting. 38% out of Mitchell and 38% out of Rubio from the field, and they're two out of your three top shooters. That's not going to get it done ever. I think they're just going to keep falling. On top of that, one of their most valuable players right now that people don't know about is Thabo Sefolosha. They're 7.9 better when he's on the court, and then 9.4 points they're getting outscored by when he's off the court per 100 possessions. That's crazy that he's been so important.
Yeah, Thabo's a guy that I get a lot of value on for FanDuel. Starting my FanDuel lineup for like $3,000. He's good. He's reliable.
No, Thabo's great.
Yeah.
Thabo is like one of the unsung kind of heroes in the NBA. Still getting his run in and everything else. But no, he's been excellent for a long time. He fits a niche. You know, he's not going to play, you know, 30 plus minutes a night every single night. But, you know, defensively, he's definitely up there. And I think he brings a lot to the table for just about anything. I think he's one of the players, one of maybe, you know, 30 or 40 players in the league that every team would probably want in some way, shape, or form if they could roster them.
So, real quickly, we really did a bad job of our doubleheader just then. We've totally forgot about Oklahoma City.
Totally skipped the Oklahoma City Thunder. Let's just move to the Oklahoma. Yeah, so the Oklahoma City Thunder here. Yes, while there's question marks, people have to understand the dynamics between this situation. It's not necessarily coaching. However, I will say that Billy Donovan has not done a very good job at maximizing his talent when he's had it. Victor Oladipo is showing people that the Oklahoma City Thunder may have made a mistake. I'm not saying with the trade necessarily, but just with his development overall as a player when he was there, he should have been better.
Yeah.
And I think that comes down to coaching. I think it comes down to Russell Westbrook as a player. I think it's very hard, and I don't mean this in a bad way. All these Russell Westbrook fans will come out of the woodwork and kill me for it, but Russell Westbrook is probably, I would assume, one of the hardest players to play with. Not because he does pass the ball or doesn't pass the ball. It's just the way and the style of play that he played and the way he plays is just not conjunctive, like just really, really not conducive of other players thriving in that kind of system or role, especially when you have guys like Carmelo Anthony and Paul George who are used to having the ball in their hands, you know, 9 times out of 10 yep. for their respective teams. So this is very similar to the Miami Heat situation. However, I don't know if, you know, even looking back, Chris Bosh was probably more unselfish than Paul George.
Oh, yeah.
And Dwayne Wade was most certainly more unselfish than Carmelo Anthony, in my opinion. Now, I'm not saying that that can't change, because that's exactly what happened with the Miami Heat. Everybody had question marks regarding who's going to have the ball late in games, who's going to dribble the ball up the court, who's going to be the point guard, who's going to facilitate the offense, how are the rotations going to work. All these question marks came up when the Miami Heat joined forces, and I think it's very, very similar to what you're seeing in Oklahoma City. So do I think it'll work out? Sure. I think they'll be better than 500. I think they'll make the playoffs. I'm sure, you know, they may win a first-round series. I am not buying them as a championship-level team wow. whatsoever, at all. Like, not even close. I mean, I think a lot of people were like, the Oklahoma City Thunder could really pose a threat to Golden State. I completely disagree. I think they're probably the fourth or fifth team I would peg against Golden State in the Western Conference alone.
Wow, very interesting. I like that. I'm going to go ahead and say that you're right about the growing pains. It's very similar to the Miami Heat. They were so ball dominant on their old teams, and everybody expected them to struggle right off the gate. And I think that's what you're seeing. But I'm buying them getting a lot better. Not testing the Warriors, but I still see them as a 3 or 4 seed. Once they start clicking mid-season and they're all know their roles and they all are starting to know each other's movements and play style, I think this is going to be a well-oiled machine. I would hate to see them have an offense like just one-on-one ISO. So this trip, Melo gets the ball, do your thing, go one-on-one. Next trip, Paul George, get the ball, do your thing, one-on-one. Same thing with Russ. I would hate to see that. I would love to see more ball movement, more a fluid offense.
So it's crazy how many people, how many OKC fans are going for Billy Donovan's head already. And honestly, I've never been a fan of him since he's gotten there. I thought it was impressive. Sure, he almost made it to the finals his first year, but that's because it was Russ and KD at their peak together, making it work. And his first 2 years, he's allowed that ISO play. He has put in no offense. He's just allowed that ISO to continue. Like you said, Oliver, I mean, he's put in no offense. There's no ball movement. There's no player movement. People aren't cutting, curling. They're not doing anything. Russ is, I mean, he's taking a back seat, sure, which is good. That's good to see. But I don't think that's what they need. I think he needs to get back into killer form. People need to move more and cut and move with Russ. Paul George doesn't need the ball as much. He's one of the most dynamic scorers, and I've talked about this plenty in the past. But Melo's got to learn to go to Olympic Melo. Melo's been the biggest issue, even though he's had some good games. He's been so critical because he's been so ISO. He's been such an ISO player. There's been not much ball movement out of him. And their most valuable player right now is almost Steven Adams. He's benefiting so much from these guys. He leads Oklahoma City in box plus minus, win shares, and PER, which is just insane.
Wow. Yeah, Steven's balling. All right. As we wrap up here, our last segment, top five. And since we have the big three maestro, Oliver Maroney, with us today, we are doing top five players that we would love to see in the big three next year. Not saying that mine and Zach's lists are accurate, just saying that they're wish lists. We hope to see these guys, and it would be awesome to see these guys compete in the big three. We're going to start with ours, but then Oliver, yours is going to be different. Yours will probably be more realistic. You have the inside scoop. You know the guys that are itching to get in there. So we'll do our wish list first, our Fantasy Island big three top five first, and then we'll let you have yours. My number five, I'm going to go from 5 to 1.
Yeah, give it all.
So I'm saving my 1 is the best for last. So 5, I'm going to start with ESPN host Jay Williams. I really liked him at Duke. I really like him as an analyst. He knows what he's talking about when he's talking college hoops. And from what I hear, he can still hoop. Like, he's still good. He's still quick. He's still got a J. I see him on social media. He has a really good social media following. I think he'd be really entertaining. The Truth, Paul Pierce, straight from the set of The Jump. He's a Rock Chalk guy. We're both KU guys. He's not that removed from being retired, so I think he could he would benefit from the half-court settings for sure. Number three, I got Shaq, which I think Shaq would be a monster, especially with this bully ball. Hardly any foul calls. Number two, the Mamba, Kobe Bryant. This is just it's Fantasy Island, so, I mean, Kobe, 2 years removed from playing. Hopefully his Achilles can hold up, but his competitiveness and his outside jumper, I think he'd be a four-point shooting machine. And then number one, I want the tenacity and the ferociousness of Kevin Garnett. I want to see Kevin Garnett in a Big Three jersey just beating up on people down low.
Let's go.
I think it'd be awesome.
Love it. God damn it. I thought I was going to do so good.
It's a good list.
I didn't have any of Ryan's top four.
But I stole your KG.
Yeah, you stole my number one. That was KG.
That's my number one, too. He'd be awesome there.
He's my favorite player of all time. So I would love to get KG out there and dominate. And he's physical. We like our physical guys in the Big Three. Get that no fall rule in the last 3 minutes. Oliver, that one's on you. So my other four, at number five, I got Baron Davis. He still looks like he can dunk a little bit. He's scoring. I mean, he's been wanting to try to make a push back into some league in some shape or size.
Yeah, he's a big Drew League guy.
Right. So I think he would be a great addition. Number four, I feel like this guy, I mean, he looks like he's in great shape. I don't know how much he's balling. Kind of looks like Ryan a little bit. Just give him three more inches. And I don't know, maybe Ryan's got a comparable shot. But this is one of the best small forwards in Timberwolves history, or shooting guards, whatever you put him. Wally Szczerbiak.
I love it.
I would love for him to come out of the woodwork. And then another ex-Timberwolf, who is one of my favorite sneaky players of all time. He's had some play out in your land at Sacramento. He's an ex-Minnesota Gopher, Mr. Long Sox, Bobby Jackson himself. That's an aged one. That guy's old. But I think he can still play. Looks to be in great shape. Number two would be Rasheed Wallace.
That's a good one. Oh, man. Ball don't lie. That's a great one.
I love it. And then your number one's KG.
It is. And the guy had supplement because Ryan had KG. I'm going to throw in Ben Wallace.
Ooh, I like that. That's a really good one.
That's a good one.
All right, Oliver.
Those are all very good. I think they're mostly reasonable. I think Kobe may be difficult. I think Shaq may be a push. But I think for the most part, like, I wouldn't be shocked to see any of those guys.
Wow.
I have a couple of names that you guys had. I'll start with number five, Paul Pierce. I think that's a very, I mean, obviously, we all know Paul Pierce. That'd be fun to watch. Yeah. I think he'd have a lot of fun with it.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, he can still play, I think, at this point, retiring, you know, just a couple of seasons ago. You look at, Glenn Davis, I think, is another one that people kind of put under the radar. So that would be number fourth.
Bully ball.
Big baby.
And then I'm just going to go with the Celtics three. I have to throw Ray Allen in there. I just think that would be fun to watch, definitely. And, you know, maybe this is a little fantasy land for myself, but I think that would be, like I said, a big three with the Celtics. If it's Kevin Garnett, awesome as well. I'm not going to steal your guys' picks there. number two, I was going back and forth, but I'm just going to go with what I would love to see. I would love to see Chris Webber back in a jersey and just see kind of what he's like. Mm-hmm. I don't know how much, you know, basketball shape he's in. I'm sure he still plays. That would be my second pick. And then number one, gotta go Gilbert Arenas.
Legendary.
Yeah, Joe Gill. And that,
Agent Zero.
I'm not going to speculate or make any rumors about.
Come on, drop something.
He did show up at a Big Three practice last year. He was hitting 4-point shots with me. He knows the guys. There's some other things, business endeavors that he's with a couple of players, I believe. So, like, I would not be shocked one bit to see his name crop up here in the next few weeks.
Agent
or months,
Zero.
Whenever they make a name there. So, yeah, that would be one I would definitely ping to actually be in the Big Three. I'm not sure if it happens, but, like I said, he showed up at a Big Three practice, looked like he wanted to play. I don't know. Like I said, this is all speculation just based on him shooting, like, 4 or 5 in a row, 4-point shots, and swishing every one of them. But he looked like he wanted to play.
That's awesome. Hibachi
himself.
Yeah, Agent Zero, that'd be an awesome one. Well, Oliver, this was awesome. Thanks for joining us tonight. I love your outlook on everything that you're doing. You're building relationships. I think your view on your writing style with your eye test being more important than your stats is refreshing. I think we need more of that. So thanks again for coming on with us.
Hey, no, anytime, guys. I really appreciate the time, and have a good rest of your night. Enjoy the NBA slate that is today.
Oliver, I'm actually going to be out there in a couple weeks, I think early January, for a Blazers-Spurs game. So might have to hit you up. But
certainly.
Good talking to you, and love to have you on again, man.
All right, sounds good.